This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Until last week, you may never have heard of a polar vortex. That is, unless you happen to see the 2004 film The Day After Tomorrow.
Mr. Vice President, if we don't act now, it's going to be too late.
I'm afraid that time has come and gone, my friend.
What can we do?
Save as many as you can.
Okay, so maybe last week wasn't that bad, but it did get pretty darn frigid and got us wondering, how did Polar Vortex 2014 stack up against previous cold snaps? And who decides when a storm is a superstorm or a blizzard worthy of being given a name anyway? Helping to separate the sensational from the sensible is Jason Salmonow, weather editor for The Washington Post and chief meteorologist for the Capital Weather Gang. Jason, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So the term polar vortex was not invented in January 2014. Why hadn't we heard of one up until now?
Yeah, actually, the term polar vortex has been around since the 1940s when it first appeared in the meteorological literature. And it's real. It's both in the northern hemisphere on the North Pole and in the southern hemisphere on the South Pole. And it's here all winter long. It's here even in the summer, but it just kind of shrinks down and gets weaker. Obviously, in the winter when it's colder, that's when it grows and intensifies. And sometimes, if it gets strong enough, pieces of it can break off and drop down into North America and even into the United States.
Another term that got introduced to us last week, snowquakes. First, explain that, and how long has that term been around?
Right. So snowquakes happen, or ice quakes are sometimes called, when you have a warm ground and then it suddenly freezes. The ground then expands and you get a bit of an earthquake type sensation. Sometimes there are sonic booms associated with those. They're somewhat rare and more of just a spectacle or odd atmospheric phenomenon. Nothing too hazardous, fortunately.
This particular polar vortex, very, very cold, Midwest and Eastern Seaboard, but not as cold as some might have predicted. How did it stack up against other cold spells?
Sure. So this particular cold spell was probably the coldest since 1996 or 1994. So obviously one of the coldest in a couple of decades. But when we look at the historic record, when we look at the 1980s, 70s, and even if we go further back to the late 1800s, this cold wave was not remarkable at all. And in fact, if we look at temperature trends over time, we see a warming trend. We see a gradual reduction in the intensity of these cold waves, and they're becoming further spaced apart over time. So whereas in the late 1800s, these types of events were happening every few years, we're now seeing them now at an interval of maybe every 10 to 20 years. So they're definitely becoming less intense and more spaced out.
We here in New England remember the nor'easter that hit last February. Now, this was nicknamed Nemo by the Weather Channel. The Weather Channel's decision to start naming storms last year was pretty controversial. I'm wondering what you and meteorologist circles thought of it.
Right. Well, there's a little bit of controversy simply from the standpoint that there's some people in the weather community who feel like the Weather Channel is, in a way, trying to play God or trying to take over the world of weather by naming storms and basically taking ownership. Why should the Weather Channel be the entity that's naming storms? Why not the National Weather Service? From my standpoint, here the Capital Weather Gang, we're the DC's weather blog. We actually name significant storms when they affect the region locally, but we try to get reader input and get suggestions for storm names and try to have some locally relevant term. In March, we had we named the storm March 6th the Snowquester, so that obviously resonated pretty well. But we try to give a storm a name which has some meaning, whereas the Weather Channel's names they're just sort of arbitrarily assigned. Personally, I don't have any problem with the Weather Channel naming storms if they want to do it and their audience finds it entertaining and useful. But there are some folks within the meteorological community who there's a bit of resentment or maybe jealousy going on there, perhaps.
Well, and maybe confusion for we, the watchers. I mean, it's very difficult for us to be able to discern the legitimate big superstorm that we should prepare for that might pose a threat, and whether that's just being sort of trumped up or hyped so people will stay tuned in. How do we tell the difference?
I think it's up to the individual to be a judicious consumer of weather information and to critically look at the weather information which is provided and then determine who they trust. And I think if people do that, then they won't be misled and they won't necessarily buy into the hype as much.
When you've warned people about the flaky Facebook forecasts that proliferate on social media. So is part of the problem that people don't really think about vetting their weather sources, or we just assume that a weather forecast is a weather forecast?
I think there's some truth to that. There certainly is a growing contingent of what I call armchair meteorologists on Facebook who are posting hype-filled forecasts for storms maybe 7 to 10 days into the future, when really when we look at forecasts that far ahead of time, there's not a lot of skill and predictability. We're really only able to provide credible forecasts within about 3 to 5 days.
How about 45 days? You've been critical of the website AccuWeather, which actually offers 45-day forecasts.
Right. So I think AccuWeather has excellent meteorologists. They provide really good forecasts in the short range. But where I have a philosophical difference with them, and a lot of people in the meteorological community have taken issue with the fact that they're trying to predict the weather beyond a point at which the weather is really predictable. You take an average high 10 days from now, it's maybe 45, the low is 28 here in D.C. That's about as likely to be right as the AccuWeather 10-day forecast, and especially when you go out to 45 days. That's just absurd.
So, Jason, we have a plenty of armchair meteorologists. It seems that this polar vortex also brought out a number of armchair climate change experts. What do you see in that kind of assertion of either this being evidence of climate change or the non-existence of climate change?
Yeah, well, I think it's really misleading. You can't point to an individual weather event in a particular region and try to link it to climate change, because climate change is about looking at long-term trends over large regions. And when we look at that, we see an unmistakable trend towards warming. Now, on the flip side, you asked about, well, people saying, well, you know, this cold wave is actually evidence of global warming and climate change. And there's a theory out there that basically climate change by melting Arctic ice is going to cause the polar vortex to weaken. And when the polar vortex is weakened, the jet stream, which is underneath it, tends to become more wavy and meanders more, and that can lead to more extreme weather. So what we might see in the future as we look into the coming decades is more variability in the weather, because if this polar vortex is in fact weakening, that might make the jet stream a little bit more erratic and more variable. But I think when we look at cold weather overall, we're still likely to see less of it, because as these heat-trapping gases continue to build up in the atmosphere, that's going to put a lot of pressure on these cold air outbreaks.
Jason Samenow, weather editor at The Washington Post, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Jason is also chief meteorologist for the Capital Weather Gang. Thank you for spending some time with Word of Mouth today. We hope you continue to come back throughout the month for our Rethink 2014 series. We're starting this new year with conversations that challenge existing assumptions and habits, and as we heard today, some of the ways that stories get framed and passed around. Is there something you're rethinking this year? A way of operating that you've been taking for granted and ready to change? Are you readjusting how you think of what you want to do versus what you have to do? We'd love to hear from you. You can tell us what you're rethinking on our Facebook page, wordofmouthradio.org, or on Twitter, @wordofmouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Please join us again for more conversations we came upon by Word of Mouth. Tomorrow at 2 on NHPR.